From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made at a young woman's bedside in the emergency room at Strong Hospital. The woman was a victim of domestic violence, and she made her way to the hospital after her partner severely injured her. An advocate helping her said she was beaten so badly, her face was unrecognizable. The woman is someone from our community, and she's one of the nearly 4,800 people who reported domestic violence in Monroe County last year. She's one of nearly 20 people per minute who are physically abused by an intimate partner. And while it's important to understand how many people are affected by intimate partner violence, let's not forget about the human element. Each report of intimate partner violence represents the life of someone who has been impacted by trauma or tragedy. Victims of domestic violence suffer from visible and hidden burdens, and they often find it challenging to seek help. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and this hour, we're talking about new resources for victims and families in our community, and we'll hear from survivors of intimate partner violence who are sharing their stories with the hope of helping others. I'd like to welcome my guest this hour. Jamie Saunders is the president and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Elaine Bell is an intimate partner violence survivor and an advocate. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Michelle Requa, did I pronounce that right?
Requa.
Requa, thank you. I should have checked with you beforehand. Michelle Requa is an intimate partner violence survivor as well, also an advocate. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And Ellen Polshuk, did I get that one right?
Yes.
Okay, is the director of the HEAL Collaborative at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Welcome to you.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Jamie and Ellen, I know that we often talk about intimate partner violence, domestic violence on this program, but let's talk about definitions before we get into some stories and statistics, because I think a big misunderstanding is that it doesn't always have to involve physical violence. So walk us through what it entails.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing this issue to the forefront. It's just so incredibly important that we talk about this. This is a preventable crime, a preventable issue. The more we talk and we can help and support. When we talk about domestic violence or dating violence or intimate partner violence, what we're really talking about is not only physical, as you mentioned, Megan. It is a spectrum. It really boils down to the power and control that one person has over another. We know through research and science, and my colleague here on the panel can also chime in, but we know that just the mere threat of violence has a physical impact. You can imagine, I don't know if many of you have ever been pulled over for speeding or have ever looked in your rearview mirror and you see those red lights flashing. If you've ever had that feeling, many get that shot of cortisol. They get this stress hormone that shoots up in your body. Imagine if you came home every single night and that's what you were experiencing. Is that tension? Is that stress and strain? We know it impacts the young people in our lives. We know that it impacts how you think, how you behave, and it is so pervasive. And again, the main point to get across is that it doesn't have to be this way as we all work together.
Ellen, and this doesn't affect only women. We're talking about families, men, children, senior citizens.
Absolutely. Anybody can experience intimate partner violence, and it can take a variety of forms, as Jamie was just saying. I also think it's important to recognize it can have not only immediate implications for physical and mental health, but the repercussions continue for a long time afterwards. And so it's really important to address for current health and for long-term health.
The 2016 report card from Willow was just released. And let's talk about some of the numbers. Some good news, I think, Jamie. The numbers are down. Reports of domestic violence are down for the sixth year in a row, but those rates are still higher than the state average. Let's talk a little bit about how that breaks down.
So the data, we like to look at the information in our community locally, and it's nearly 50,000 calls are made every single year in Monroe County to 911 dispatch for domestic disputes. When we look at the makeup of those who are reporting through our legal system, you're completely correct. The numbers are down. And counterintuitive, I want those to go up. I want those to go up because it is documented that the majority of those reports, about 70% of domestic violence reports, never see the light of day. There's a lot of reasons why survivors do not feel that they can step forward. And I also must say that survivors are resilient and strong and brave, like the incredible women that are sitting across from me right now. There are a variety of factors that make barriers or prevent an individual from stepping forward, and it is never their fault. But it is important to recognize while the numbers look like they're going down, that's going down from reported incidents. We are seeing increases in our emergency rooms, Willow Domestic Violence Center. We're seeing increases in our emergency shelter and our counseling center. It's what our dear friend Kate Cerulli has written about, Dr. Kate Cerulli. It's this displacement. It's like water. You press it down in one spot and it comes up in other places in the community. So we know this is pervasive. We know it's all around us, and we need to continue to talk about it and work together to address it.
We'll talk to Elaine and Michelle in a moment about some of the reasons why it may be difficult to ask for help or to seek help or to reach out. But Jamie and Ellen, from your perspectives, what are some of the biggest issues you're seeing when people do come in or call? What are their biggest fears in reaching out?
I think that after being unsafe, it feels terrifying to reach out and acknowledge what's happening and worrying that the danger might increase. I think it's really hard to know where to go and what a safe place is and what those next steps can look like. And I think there are many reasons why it's difficult for people to take that first step, and the reasons why they are in the situation that they're in that could really increase their fears about what's involved, to find the courage and the ways to take that first step.
Mm-hmm. And I would add exactly as Ellen stated, and we have seen great improvements in our judicial system, in our first responders. It's light years from where it was decades ago, but there's still room for growth and improvement. It's just such a very situation where more of the blame, responsibility, disruption falls onto the victim and survivor. So if you think of at Willow, we have a 49-bed emergency shelter. I have a waiting list of 70 a week. The demand is big. And how do we, as you can imagine, a family has to make that choice. The garbage bag of belongings shows up at our doorstep. There's guilt of leaving. There's questions of leaving. What's the house look like? How do I take care of my children? All of this puts pressure on an individual to leave. And I will tell you just a chilling memory for me as one of our incredible survivors looked me in the eye and said, I'm staying for 2 more years of this abuse until my son turns 18 and does not have to see his father. And I think of what a warrior she is and how helpless we all felt, but it was the smartest thing for her to be able to do.
I think it's easy for people who are not in these situations to say, why don't you just leave? Why can't you just leave? If someone is abusing you, isn't that common sense? But they don't stop and think about the personal experience or what you just mentioned, having a family and what that could mean. Michelle and Elaine, we'll talk about your stories in just a moment, but what would you say to people who maybe have that question and don't quite understand the context?
Well, the biggest thing is that when you talk about leaving, you're talking about uprooting, if you have children, all of your children. You have to hide. Hiding isn't easy. I know. I hid. And I got found. And I got found through the mail. You know, so it's very difficult to just walk away from your whole life, no matter how bad it is at home. You think when you leave, it's going to be worse, not better. You know, and they make you believe that also.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, I didn't think I could survive on my own. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was financially dependent on him. So I just didn't think that I could do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us to the HEAL Collaborative, because there are all these different factors that weigh into decision-making, and so many things happening under the surface with victims and survivors, mental health issues, the physical threats, economic situations. And I think a lot of the times we don't talk about that because we focus on what people consider as the biggest issue, the physical. And the HEAL Collaborative is a new organization that's bringing together a lot of different entities to help out with a lot of these things. Ellen, you are the director of the HEAL Collaborative. Let's talk about what that is for those who don't know.
Yes, thank you. So the HEAL Collaborative is at the University of Rochester Medical Center. And one of the things that we learned through talking with people dealing with intimate partner violence is how difficult it is to have to go to many different places to try and get your needs met and to be interacting with people who may not entirely understand or appreciate what it means to be experiencing intimate partner violence. So we developed a medical legal partnership under the guidance of Dr. Kate Cerulli, which is one of 292 in the country that brings together trying to address medical and legal concerns. But this is the first one that really targets intimate partner violence as the focus of what we're trying to do. So what we have at HEAL at the University of Rochester Medical Center is a place where we can offer a range of services depending on what an individual needs. It can be men or women. We welcome everybody, and we're able to provide a survey to assess what people's needs may be and connect them with legal resources. We can offer safety planning, evidence-based psychotherapy to address their needs in that way, assistance with initiating orders of protection. For those who can't make it to court, we're able to do that by Skype, which is a new program that we're able to offer. We work closely with public safety and other community organizations, such as Resolve and Willow, to try and help connect people with the resources that best meet their needs.
And I'll just chime in because Ellen is modest. This is an incredible program that she's leading. It is innovative. It is unheard of. So there are other collaboratives that may exist across the country, but one that's focused on intimate partner violence is not to be missed. And the story that you shared in the beginning, that doesn't happen. That was the first order of protection issued from a hospital setting, bedside, with that young woman who made it down Mount Hope Avenue. She would not disclose that she was a victim of domestic violence. She presented with such injuries, unrecognizable. It was a Willow advocate that was at the HEAL, because we have a full-time Willow advocate right there, who went into the emergency room because the doctors knew something was wrong. It wasn't a stranger that committed this violence. And because of incredible changes at the policy level, which is in Albany, that they passed this legislation to allow this to happen using technology, using communication, and all these hurdles that Ellen and her team had to overcome so all these systems could communicate. It exemplifies for me when the community comes together with information and insight from survivors of what can we do better. There's so much that is so in front of you. How can we as a community help this and help you in a way? And that's what the HEAL Collaborative is, and we're just so thrilled to be a part of it.
And that young woman was able to file that order of protection from her bedside. She's the first person in Monroe County, the first person in New York State.
She was the first one in Monroe County, mm-hmm. and it's the first in the nation from a hospital setting.
Wow.
Yes. So that's the remote appearance. So really, it is not only just being able to draft an order of protection, and I should say in current state, and it's incredible what happens here in Monroe County, who has been a tremendous partner. They have probation, their probation department sitting at the Hall of Justice, who drafts the order of protections, and there's a Willow advocate who's right next to them. When that happens, not all counties do that. It's actually quite rare, and it's in a separate secure waiting room. In situations where the individual can't get to the Hall of Justice because of injury, because of anxiety, because of other barriers, this new collaborative is allowing for those orders of protection to be filed from HEAL, from Strong, and that is what is so innovative and new.
Mm-hmm. I do want to add one more thing about HEAL Collaborative, and that is that this is a great opportunity for people who are ready to make a change and want to leave the situation that they're in. We also welcome people regardless of where they're in their process, and they may not feel ready to leave. They may be wondering if they're in an abusive relationship. They may be wanting to just learn more about what options are available to them. And this is a safe place where they can come just to talk and explore that, even if they're not ready to make any changes in their life.
And can I chime in for a minute, because our Skype is actually a pilot program that Dr. Cerulli won for us. There were one of, I think, three across the state. I'm not really sure the number, but one of a few. And the Skyping is phenomenal. I mean, I work with Criminal Justice Committee for the consortium, and Legal Aid Society is really on board with this, and they're very happy that it's in this area.
I can see it being something that's so beneficial for people who may be afraid to leave. As you were saying, it can be hard to go outside and you want to hide. What if someone, Ellen, wants to make an appointment at the HEAL Collaborative, but they're worried about their safety getting there? Is there a resource for them on the property? Tell us where it is, and then is there a resource for them on the property that serves as protection if they're worried about that?
So HEAL is in a secure office suite that's at the medical center. So people make that appointment like they would for any other doctor's appointment, and they don't have to necessarily disclose what kind of appointment that it is that they're coming for. And when people come to an appointment, they actually check in with the ambassador in the lobby as opposed to at HEAL directly, and then the ambassador directs them to the secure office suite.
Mm-hmm. Is there public safety officers there in case someone is concerned about their immediate safety?
Yes, so good question. We have public safety immediately down the hall. They don't sit in our suite, but we have direct access to them, and they've been part of helping us set up the program to try and make it as safe for everybody as possible and come whenever we ask them to right away.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Michelle, you are the mother of two children.
Yes. I am.
And you're a grandmother?
I am.
You left an abusive relationship. Now you're here sharing your story. I'm sure that doesn't come easy, and I'm sure it's taken some time for you to be comfortable opening up about that. Why is it important for you to share that experience?
I think it's important because of my journey. It was a very difficult journey. I was married 29 years before I made the decision, and I was unaware that I was in an abusive relationship because he never physically hit me. So when I started my journey at Willow, I was unaware. And it was only through the support of Willow, my friends, my family, that I became a survivor and got out of that relationship. And now I just want to give back. I want to help people that are in the same predicament that I was in.
If you weren't sure that you were in an abusive relationship, how did you find yourself seeking help from Willow? Was there something that happened that led you to think, maybe this isn't normal, maybe this isn't right?
Actually, yes. It was when my ex-husband started verbally abusing our daughter. She was in high school. She was at a very vulnerable age. And all of a sudden, a light went off in my head and said, this isn't normal. And I, you know, as much as I thought I could fix him, I realized that it was now affecting my kids big time.
Mm-hmm. When you first got to Willow, was there anything that surprised you about yourself?
I think just that I had the courage to do it. Because, like I said before, I didn't think I could do it on my own. I just didn't think financially I could make it because I had been out of the workforce, and the support that I got at Willow, I found the courage to do it.
Mm-hmm. How is your daughter now?
Oh, she's great. She's great.
How are you now?
I'm great.
Mm-hmm. I know you've said it was very difficult for you to leave and to navigate the system. So if there are people listening who may not quite know if they're a fit for something like Willow, but they are going through the same thing that you went through. Not quite sure, but maybe something's not right. What would you tell them? There's that fear of asking for help. What would you say to someone who's listening right now, a man or a woman, wondering what the next step should be?
I would suggest to them that they contact Willow. They have great support groups there, and you don't have to make the decision. I mean, wherever you are in your journey through this, Willow can help you.
Mm-hmm. Why was it difficult for you to ask for help, do you think?
I think the not knowing, it was normal for me. It was just my normal life. So the yelling, the screaming, you know, the verbal abuse, that was just my everyday life. So it was difficult for me to understand that was abuse.
Listeners, if you're hearing this conversation and you have a story that you would like to share, if you have questions for our survivors or our representatives from Willow or HEAL, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. If you wish to remain anonymous, just mention that in your email. We won't use your name on the air. And you can also find me on Twitter at mmacmedia, if that's easier for you. Jamie and Ellen, when you have people like Michelle and Elaine come to you for help, and they're scared, They're worried. They're wondering what's going to happen to their families right there in the short term. What do you do in that first appointment, that first session, to help them realize this is a safe space, you're going to be okay, we can help you?
That's a really good question. We think that the most important thing is to meet the individual where they're at. So we need to understand what his or her fears are, what their goals are, and do everything we can to make them safe. So by asking them some questions and having them complete the screening process that we do, it helps us appreciate what their goals are and trying to respond to what their immediate concerns are. So if they're scared to go home today, then we'll try and help the person with that. Or if they're just wanting a place to talk and reflect, then that's what we'll provide.
If they are scared to go home that very same day, where can they go? Where's a safe space that they can go?
So at Willow Domestic Violence Center, we're known mostly for our emergency shelter, but as you just heard, our counseling center actually serves more, and we're available for anyone from the community. Half of our clients are from our suburbs and half are from our city. It is in every single zip code, and all of our services are free and confidential. And just to piggyback on what Ellen just said, same at HEAL, where Willow is also present, and it's great services in the one-stop shop. The philosophy at Willow is to be there on the journey with that particular individual and meet them where they at. Exactly right. We have a solution-focused approach, which is to help the individual find out what are your goals, how can we help you, and that can range. It can range, just as Ellen talked about. Some are not ready to leave, or the story I shared with the woman, she decided to stay for 2 years, and she knew we needed to help her on safety planning and her own emotional and physical safety, because that was what made sense to her at the time. To someone who will leave after the first incident. It is that emotional, financial, physical, sexual, verbal abuse is such a range. And while we talk in these statistics, you know, the 50,000 calls to 911 or the 5,000 reports or underreport, it's 1 in 3 women, 1 in 4 men who will be a victim of domestic violence in his or her lifetime. All of those are numbers. All of those journeys are unique, and the person who is in it is the expert. So at Willow, we do a lot of listening, and we do a lot of supporting and a lot of encouraging, because, again, the survivors are resilient and strong, and we learn from them every single day.
For someone who is afraid to go to Willow or HEAL because they may be thinking, they're going to tell me to leave, I'm not ready to leave, I don't want someone lecturing me about what I should do with my life, and I don't mean to sound negative about this, I'm trying to put myself in someone's shoes who's not quite ready to leave yet. How do you help them navigate that thought process without making them feel unsafe or pressured?
That's great. I'd firstly state, we at Willow, we will never say, why do you stay or why don't you leave? That's just we have a whole training about it. We would never, it's not part of our philosophy or DNA. It really is about what the survivor needs, and they are the expert. In terms of the fear, that's why many do not step forward, is because of the judgment. It's, again, 1 in 3 women will be a victim of domestic violence in his or her lifetime. So you think about at the water cooler, you think about us commenting on an event that happened nationally, survivors are listening to you. So how we establish that culture, how we make it safe for people to share and not have the shame, to not feel the blame, is such a critical cultural shift that everybody who's listening, everybody who is around human beings, works with human beings, worships with human beings, raises human beings, you have a role to play.
Mm-hmm. We have a survivor on the phone who would like to share her story. This is Teta in Rochester. Hi, Teta.
Hi there.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm so grateful to ABW. I was 19 years in a marriage. I realized the morning after the wedding that I was in an abusive relationship, but I was 6 weeks pregnant. And the counselors through ABW, as it was called then, let me speak to them on the phone from the attic or from my car so many times and kept me together, and I was so grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to share three useful pieces of information. I've written them down. First of all, I was seeing a counselor once a month, paying cash. When I finally called the police, when my kitchen, a lot of china was being broken in my kitchen, and I was terrified, and I promised my counselor that the next time an outbreak occurred, I would call the police. My kids were 9 and 11 years old. And the police brought into the house 2 decorated teddy bears, One had a T-shirt on, the other one had an apron on or something. And years later, I tried to, my habit with toys was to put them in the attic for 6 months when they weren't being played with, and then giving them to charity if they were in good shape, or throwing them out if they were worn out. And with those teddy bears, when I was about to put them in the attic, I think my son was maybe 13, and he said, oh, no, those are wonderful, wonderful things. I said, you're too big for teddy bears. He said it was the first time that we had any awareness that anyone in the community cared at all about us. Those teddy bears brought by the police when they were investigating a domestic violence incident, they were being told that they mattered. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, I had a neighbor who himself had, he was in a good relationship when he was my neighbor, but he had previously been with a lady who was a senior administrator in a school system, so he didn't want to publicize the nature of the abuse he was experiencing involving lit cigarettes, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, but he taught me about the availability of having your kids go and speak to the judge in chambers. What that means is that the child is speaking against a parent, but in a private setting where it will not be part of the transcript in family court. Mm-hmm. And that is so important. My grown children now have a relationship with their father, and they see him about once a month or more frequently, but when they were angry and upset and were getting orders of protection against their father, I didn't let them publicly humiliate him. I restrained their anger so that later they would have a relationship with that parent. And my third point is that it's wonderful that we're doing more. As a victim, ultimately, the isolation from friends and the constant destruction of any self-esteem you might have ultimately impacted my ability to practice medicine. I lost my license, and I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. And I'm writing wonderful movies and books, and someday I'll be rich and famous. But it could happen. But
it
I
could.
Would submit to you that 20 years from now, we need to go with the next wave of civilization, which is what Desdemona asked for in the opera Othello. We need to. She was praying and singing at the famous opera about her abuser and anticipating her own death. And she said, these people need prayer and they need help also. Mm-hmm. And we're not there yet, but someday we're going to turn around and try and find a way to help the abusers, because they are hurting, unhappy, miserable human beings. Mm-hmm. We can't fix them. We, the victims, cannot fix them. But ultimately, society needs to take a look, because it's not enough to simply help the victim, the survivors.
Thank you,
Tony. So those were my three comments, and I wrote them down because I suffer from verbal excess. I covered my point. Damn it, at 67, I'm almost grown up.
Thank you, Tata, for sharing your story. And you raise a number of very good points that I think we should address. The first being how to help kids. I mean, when children as young as yours were, Michelle, up through teenagers, they're dealing with what they might be seeing at home, and then what if they are asked to testify in court? Jamie, I saw you nodding your head when Tata was speaking about that part. Tell us what some of the options are and what Willow might do to help families at that stage.
So I was also nodding my head about taking the toys away, trying to declutter your house, which is fantastic. No, I just want to say, Tata, you are inspiring. Everything you just said is so on point. You are mighty and you are strong, and I am very filled by what you just shared. A couple of points, that the police program where they bring teddy bears that still works, and our mayor, Lovely Warren, has reinstituted that program. And they do take collections of teddy bears, so people can support in that way. At Willow, and when a child arrives, they get a new toy. We only can do that because the community donates and allows us to do that. And it's a brand new toy. It's not the used toy that my kids are done with. It's just about pride and respect. And it's the small thing about showing that you matter. And that is really powerful. I have 34 kids in our shelter right now. We know there'll be more children tomorrow. And they're the ones that are being picked up and sitting next to, you know, your children at school. And they're trying to keep it together. So it's important that as a community, we are have our antenna up. We are looking at the young people. When we look at if they're late to class or feeling withdrawn, we're there to support them and lift them up in every way possible. Domestic violence is learned. It is learned behavior. We know that violence in the home impacts how we learn, how we interact with others. It spills out into the streets and manifests in our behavior. So we have a way to stop this if we work and support our young people. I now have a middle schooler. This is new for me as a parent, not for most in the room here. And they're starting to date. You know, so how are we supporting our teens and our tweens? Because they are dating and they are modeling and they are learning from the media about what this means, what is a healthy relationship and an unhealthy relationship. And we need to talk about what a dangerous one looks like. So talk early and often to your children, because this is preventable. In terms of those who are experiencing domestic violence and listening to Teta's story, absolutely ways to shield children from this horrific experience. Maintaining that connection with a parent might make sense if it's safe to do so. Testifying in chambers, keeping children and their roles in mind as we make our decisions are just paramount.
Mm-hmm. Teta also mentioned helping abusers and can we fix people? I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, she said that we can't. But, and that's a broad question, maybe that's something for a separate hour, but what should we be doing, if anything, to help people who are making these kinds of choices that are really inflicting tragedy upon others?
Two things I'll start with, and Ellen can chime in here. Hurt people hurt people, right? We probably have heard that phrase, hurt people hurt people. And that is something we need to address, because we are, it's a learned behavior. So why is somebody responding in this way? Willow, we focus on the survivor. We are not part of the batter intervention programs. Our dear partners at Delphi do incredible work, Catholic Family Center. But the number is small of who was participating, and the volume should be very high, but it's really based on limited numbers, limited resources. What keeps me up at night, I mentioned the 34 children in our shelter program alone. We know through research that those children have a higher likelihood to grow up to either be a victim or a perpetrator of violence. How do we stop it? How do we interrupt that? How do we prevent it from continuing? And it's exactly right. This doesn't happen in isolation. We do need to focus on the perpetrators and then some.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, in many ways, this relates to the question you asked prior to that. Often, I think we really focus on teaching girls and women about how to keep themselves safe from being victims. But I think we need to teach girls and boys and men and women about what healthy relationships look like, how to deal with their anger, how to deal with conflict in constructive ways so that they don't become perpetrators of violence themselves.
Mm-hmm. Michelle and Elaine, as two people, two survivors, two warriors who have been through this yourselves, what do you hope to see, if anything, for people who are abusers and may need some help? I know that's a tough question.
It's a tough question because we're looking at it from a whole different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know what you do. It is a mindset. People ask all the time. They want to talk about rational behavior, and they don't. Your abuser has no rational behavior. People expect, you know, that there's an answer for the way they're acting. And I'd like to say that there just isn't really an answer, not from a victim's point of view, okay? Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be that, well, he did it because. We give him excuses. I can't tell you how many excuses over 15 years I made for my abuser with even his own family. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really don't know.
I just want to clarify. I don't mean to diminish your experience and characterize someone who made terrible, terrible choices as someone who is also a victim. I'm thinking about what Jamie said. Hurt breeds hurt, and the only way to try to change these situations is to have conversations with people. But I just want to be clear, I don't mean to take away from your experience or anything that you've been through, because you here are the victims and you are the survivors.
I would like to see something done for perpetrators.
The issue is they'd have to admit that they were the abuser. And in my case, that would never happen. He mm-hmm. doesn't have a relationship now with his kids or his grandkids. Mm-hmm. So I never see that mm-hmm. happening, him stopping.
Mm-hmm. And I either. I mean, I know that mine now lives away, but his children hardly ever see him or hear from him. So, you know, choices, they make choices, and bad ones, yes, you know, but still, they're choices of an adult.
Mm-hmm. And I would add, just as you both state there, and you also, Megan, I know there is just never an excuse or a reason for abuse. There just never is. What looking at the longer view, it's why. Why is somebody abusing? Why are they hitting? What I love about both of you is that you make it so relevant and current and just about your own families, and we have to make sure we keep that in mind because that's really what is important and what is so of significance. But it is never acceptable, and it's also very well hidden and strategic. So I don't know about your particular situations, but often we find at Willow the perpetrator is beloved, well-liked out in the community. It's behind closed doors where they're a nightmare and a terror. And that adds to the isolation for when somebody steps forward and the family says, are you sure? Really? Because he's so nice. And so when you start to minimize and devalue what a person's experience is, it causes more and more isolation for the victim, for the survivor. And that is where we, all of us, the listeners, all of us, have an opportunity to listen, to not judge, to really be there, and especially when it's hard. This is when people need us the most, and many run for the hills, I'm so sorry to say.
Yes, can I speak to the support? Because I had great support when I was going through this. I met wonderful women at Willow who were still good friends with, and my family was so supportive, and I had a girlfriend who actually let me hide with her in her home, and that was a risk that she took, and she was willing to, you know, and that was huge, the support. And it's hard to support somebody of domestic violence because we do go back, mm-hmm. and it's hard to understand why. It's hard sometimes for us to understand why, but, you know, the support, if they can hang in there with somebody until they do whatever it is they need to do, it really means the world.
Mm-hmm. Elaine, I want to hear more about your story and talk about your experience, but I'm very late for our only break of the hour, so we'll take that short break. We also have some listeners who want to weigh in as well. Keith and Jane, hang on the line for us. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'll take our short break and more connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Friday on The Next Connections, sometimes we hear generalizations about how city schools stack up to suburban schools when it comes to amenities. We'll talk about the Rochester City School District's facilities modernization plan and what it hopes to accomplish in that regard. Then in our second hour, we'll have some clowns in the studio. We're talking about why people might be afraid of clowns and how public perception has changed because of movies like It. That's Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and this show, we're talking about domestic violence, its impact on victims and families, and also about the HEAL Collaborative, which is a new organization in Rochester, which is bringing together multiple social sector and legal organizations to help victims where they are. And if you are listening to this program and you feel like you need help or you would like to call the HEAL Collaborative or Willow Domestic Violence Center, I will let Jamie Saunders and Ellen Polshuk jump in and tell us how we can connect with those two organizations. Ellen?
Sure. If you want to reach out to HEAL, we're available 8:30 to 5 Monday through Friday, and you can call 275-HEAL, HEAL, or 4325. That's 275-4325.
And Willow Domestic Violence Center, formerly Alternatives for Battered Women. And we are available 24/7, our crisis and emergency hotline, or just if you have a question, if you are concerned about a friend or a neighbor, or you don't know what you have, please feel free to call 222-SAFE, S-A-F-E, and that's 585 area code, 222-SAFE.
Thanks. And we'll make sure we repeat those numbers before the end of the program. So listeners, if you need them, they are there for you. First up on the phones is Keith in Farmington. Hi, Keith.
Interesting conversation today. Got a couple questions. First one, Our healthcare professional is mandated in reporting any suspected abuse, such as, let's say, a patient comes in because their knee hurts and you notice a black eye and cuts to the hands or something. Are they, I mean, a good professional would pick up on that observation and say something, but are they required to report it, such as you do with issues of child abuse? Second question is, what, not where you're located, I just want to know where the geographical location range. So do you take people from Ontario County, or do you take people all the way from the southern part of Ontario County? What contiguous area within Rochester? And third, I know money is probably the best thing anybody could give you, but other than that, do you accept time and material as a donation?
Thank you.
So if somebody would be willing to help out with time-wise, and would you accept that and basically volunteer? And let's say you had just happened to have a case of shampoo that fell off the back of a tractor trailer and you picked it up.
We like you, Keith.
Like come anytime.
I know.
thanks, Keith. Thank you for all those questions. Keith, I'll let our panelists jump in.
Thanks, Keith. I'll answer the, I think a few of those were directed towards Willow, and then we'll flip it over to Heal and the healthcare in terms of their reporting. So in terms of from Willow, we serve Monroe County. We are the certified domestic violence provider for this region. We partner with other domestic violence providers. You said you were calling in from Farmington. So in Ontario, we partner, there's a Finger Lakes victim service organization, but it's not an emergency shelter. In Wayne County is also nearby. Do we take from out of county? Absolutely. From the emergency shelter and counseling, no one is prohibited from accessing services at Willow, but we would partner with throughout the network. In terms of donations, if you go to willowcenterny.org, there's a wish list there. Right now we're looking for Halloween costumes for our kiddos, but we also, can you imagine, we make 70,000 meals a year. We need toys. We need shampoos. We need everything you can think of to keep all of our survivors safe and healthy. So in terms of healthcare providers and referrals, I'll turn to Ellen.
Thanks, Jamie. So it's a really excellent question, because as you make reference to, when healthcare providers are concerned about children's safety, they're mandated to report that. That is not true when it comes to intimate partner violence. So people are in control themselves of what information is disclosed or is not disclosed. The only exception to that is if the children are witnessing or victims of the actual violence that's happening. So I think that's really important for people to know in terms of their comfort or safety in stepping forward. So in terms of who HEAL can support, we are best equipped to help people who can physically make it to us. And so certainly people who are closer to Strong Hospital are going to get there more easily, but we are happy to see anybody who can make it. And I realized I didn't explicitly say that our many of our services are free of charge. So even though we are at Strong, for people who want to have an assessment and support and safety planning, meet with a Willow advocate, there's no charge for any of those services. If they decide to use psychotherapy as a resource, then we would bill insurance. In terms of resources for HEAL, I think the best thing we can ask you for help with is getting the word out. So we are a new shop, and we are really excited about what we have to offer in terms of the resources that we have. And I think the more that people are aware that we're available, the better.
Thanks, Ellen. I'd like to turn to Elaine Bell now. She's an intimate partner violence survivor, and now an advocate. And Elaine, you were very open in sharing your story with me over email before this program. I commend you for that, like I do Michelle. What would you like listeners to know about your experience and how you went through the process of realizing that something wasn't normal and then getting to the point where you were ready to ask for help?
Well, actually, I was with my perpetrator for 15 years. It was when my daughter got pregnant for her twins. It took her a long time, and it was very hard for her to do. And she had these babies coming, and he told me I had to make a choice between my child and him. And that was my end. There was no way I was going to be separated from my child. And so he went out one day for an hour. I knew he'd be gone. So I threw everything I could think of into the car, and I drove away. And I drove to the Walmart parking lot, and I called ABW at the time, Willow Now, called their hotline. They asked me if I was safe. I was, because I had a place to go. My girlfriend had offered that weeks before. And I started to go to the support groups. When I sat there for the first time, I really didn't think I belonged there, because he never hit me. But then as I sat and listened to the ladies' stories, I realized that most of them were telling my story. So I stayed. I got found. I moved into an apartment, and when you fill out the forms for new address, they send your new address to your old address. So Social Security Disability sent my new address to him, and on the front of it, it said new address confirmation. So of course he had it. He found me, but I was in my car, so he chased me. I was able to get away, and I came to ABW for some help, and they were able to help me. We called the police from there, and we filled out all the forms and everything. After that, I started working with a couple of the local legislators, and we have a wonderful bill out there. It's called the Omnibus Bill, and it actually covers confidentiality in your address and in your voting rights and in your DMV, and it also covers confidentiality in your medical insurance, so that if you go and receive medical care and you're on the list, they will send you, they'll send your information to this general address, and then it will be sent to you so that your address is protected, so that when you stay hidden, you can probably stay hidden for quite a while. I was only hiding. I only got to hide for about, I think, 60 days. And then he found me. So.
Did you feel, before you were at Willow, did you feel like you were alone, like you were living in isolation, no one understood what
oh,
you
yes.
were going through?
Oh, yes, except my mom. My mom kept saying, you need to leave, you need to leave. But she was 80 years old. I couldn't go to her, you know, and then my daughter was pregnant, so I couldn't go to her because I knew it would be bad, you know. So I had to wait. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know at the time that they had emergency sheltering, so I didn't understand that part. I knew I had to have some place to go. And so the waiting was long and hard. But once I found out I had some place to go, I left.
How are you now?
I'm really good.
Mm-hmm. You've been smiling since you walked in the room, so
I'd say.
Yeah, I am. I have now three lovely grandchildren, and I get to take care of them all the time. In fact, when I leave here, I'm going to go take care of them again.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You and Michelle are just such an inspiration to me, I'm sure to Jamie and Ellen, and to everyone listening. And I just want to thank you for being so open and sharing what you've gone through. I know that that can't be easy. But by doing that, you're helping so many people who may be sitting at home and listening and wondering, that sounds like my story. Like you said, Elaine, that sounds like me. Maybe it's time for me to ask for some help. And let's talk about shame. There is no shame in asking for help. How can we overcome the stigma, Jamie and Ellen, of asking for help when we need it?
Right. While we were off the air, I was talking about the incredible courage and strength it comes to make these kinds of changes and to not own the shame anymore of somebody treating you badly because it's not your fault. And so putting that aside and taking those steps to take care of yourself and recognize that you deserve better for yourself is incredibly important. Mm-hmm.
We're down to our last few minutes. There's a question that came in via email from a listener named Sarah. She says, can you speak to what resources exist for people struggling with emotional abuse? It's often hard to seek support when physical violence is not part of the equation.
So I think many of the resources that we've described today are just as useful for people who are dealing with emotional abuse as physical abuse. Emotional abuse can be just as damaging and painful, and even if it's not visible to other people. So whether it is counseling or trying to file for an order of protection or whatever, going to shelter, whatever it is, emotional abuse is just as good a reason to get that kind of help.
And that's exactly why Alternatives for Battered Women as a name, which we are proud of. We've served this community for nearly four decades under that name, which was at the forefront of this movement when nothing existed to that was comparable and nobody wanted to talk about it. But we've evolved in our thinking and we understand that it's not just physical violence. So Willow Domestic Violence Center, we are here to provide those supports through counseling, through calling our hotline at 222-SAFE. We are there to answer any questions, to provide support. Again, all services are free and confidential, and there is no judgment. And there is no hierarchy of abuse. Abuse is abuse, and there is absolutely no reason for it. And we are there, and we stand with you.
And it's not just for women.
Correct. So we also expanded from Alternatives for Battered Women because there are male survivors and also our dear friends of the LGBTQ community. We support all survivors. It still disproportionately impacts women. So about 90% of our client base remain women, but that is growing in terms of on the male side as well, both from heterosexual as well as same-sex couples.
Mm-hmm. And Ellen, remind us how we can get in touch with the HEAL Collaborative.
Yes, thank you. Again, the phone number is 585-275-HEAL, H-E-A.
One more time?
275-HEAL, H-E-A-L.
I would like to thank all of my guests today for sharing their stories, sharing all this very valuable information. And listeners, thank you for calling in as well and sharing your experiences. Thank you to Jamie Saunders of Willow and Ellen Polshuk of the HEAL Collaborative. Thank you so much for helping us put this program together. And Elaine Bell and Michelle Requa, thank you so much for sharing your stories. You've done a wonderful service to our community by being here today. Thank you. My thanks as well to Rob Braden, our engineer, our intern, Audrey Sample. I'm Megan Mack. Evan Dawson is back tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, everyone.